This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. We originate this show from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and signature support is from East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor's Office, Sharon Weston Broom. And we begin with the governor of Louisiana, the 57th governor, Jeffrey Martin Landry. He's in his 108th day as Louisiana's leader. And for those of us who have followed Jeff Landry through the years, he was a member of Congress. He was attorney general for 8 years. And now he is the governor of Louisiana. On the 14th day of October last year, he won an election against 15 opponents without a runoff. And he has been exceptionally busy. He told Tyler Bridges, who will be with us a bit later, that he doesn't move slow. It's been a historic first 107 days in office. And good morning to you, Governor Landry.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. What a beautiful day today, huh?
It's always beautiful in Louisiana, and I know you love our state. That's evident by what you said in your inaugural address. But you have been a guy who's been trying to move the state in a direction. You have a vision. Do you feel confident that you're on the right track?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, good Lord willing, I think we are. I mean, I think that, you know, as I travel and get an opportunity to travel around the state, and spending a lot more time in Baton Rouge, and I talk to people, I think they seem very excited. I think they recognize that the only way that we can lift ourselves off the bottom is to do some things a little different. And I can't tell you that everything we do is going to be absolutely perfect or right. But when we recognize that we need to make an adjustment, we'll make those adjustments. But you know, I've always learned that the only thing you can't do is not make a decision. It's the most harmful thing that a person can do is when they're frozen and not making the decision. So we'll make those decisions, and I figure at least 50% of them will be absolutely right, 25% of them will be maybe right, and the other 25 we'll fix, you know, on the way out there, you know. But I think the decisions we've made so far have been good, and I think the legislature is certainly finding its footing. But we had a lot of new members in it, and so we'll just see.
Now, the legislature, we're going to talk primarily about the Constitutional Convention, but the legislature is getting involved in not only in bread and butter issues, but a lot of social issues. And do we have a culture war in this country? Do you feel that?
I mean, yeah, look, I think that the country, you know, over the last 10 or 20 years has become more divisive along the lines of social issues. I think that those issues are primarily better debated inside state legislatures than certainly in the halls of Congress. You know, I mean, we've got a super majority of legislators from one particular party. It's something that seems to be a pattern in the South and in the Southern states, which by the way, those states are outperforming all the other states, whether they're on the East or West, in their economic metrics. And so, you know, I can't tell you that whether it's a good or a bad thing, but certainly if you look around and you see states like South Carolina and Florida and Georgia and Alabama and hell, even Mississippi and Arkansas are doing well. And that's what I'm focused on. I'm focused on bringing people back to this state and keep the good people that we have from leaving the state. That's really my focus point.
And I think the people of Louisiana believe you're a sincere man. You're not a chameleon. What you see is what you get with Jeff Landry. Now, these lawmakers have to know that if they send you a bill, it could be vetoed. That's common sense. And Governor Edwards vetoed a lot of bills. My guess is that with the supermajority you just referenced, that many of these lawmakers, they talk with you or somebody in your administration before they go forward with some of this legislation. Would that be an accurate summation of what the reality is?
Yeah, I think for the most part they are. I mean, however, you know, they are moving pretty quickly, and I'm finding some bills out there that are moving through the system that we're able to talk to them about, that to see if we can get it in a posture that we can all come to some agreement on. But yeah, look, I think that especially you know, the other thing too, Jim, is sometimes you're seeing bills pass through that may seem controversial or whatnot, but they're passing by large numbers. And those are things that we certainly will have to consider when they hit our desk. You know, are those the will of the majority of the people of the state? I mean, you know, the one thing that I can tell you that I'm extremely proud of is that all of the bills that we put forth in our particular package, whether it was in the first special session, which was a redistricting one, or the crime session, or even this one, has had bipartisan support. We have enjoyed working on both sides of the aisle and having the bills that we have supported or put forth have the support of both Democrats and Republicans.
Now, you are, I think, on the record as saying we need a new constitution, and we've had the one that's been placed for over 50 years. It's been amended over 100 times. Why do we need a new one?
Well, I wouldn't tell you we need a new one. We need to clean up the one we got. Now, whether you think that once that product is finished, it's a new one or not, I guess is debatable. But look, if you want to put Louisiana in a competitive position, you got to overhaul the tax code. And if you're going to overhaul the tax code, you got to get some of the things that are in the Constitution out of the way so that you can lay them on the table and have an open and honest discussion about those. If you don't, and look, Jim, rightfully so, next year, if we don't clean up the Constitution and we end up with $500 million shortfall, the only places that we're going to be able to take money from is going to be from education and healthcare. And I promise you, you're going to be wearing me out, and rightfully so. But I don't want that. I'd rather have the legislature in a position under which they have the opportunity to look around and to spread that pain throughout the budget process. And if you could do that, the amount of pain would be completely negligible. But that's what's happened since the 72 Constitution. The amount of special interests and protections have led us to a point under which the legislature, when it gets tough, and we get, you know, it's boom and bust cycles. When we have a bust cycle or when we get a budget shortfall, the only place we can cut is healthcare and education. You can't tell me that's productive.
Well, if you move money from one place, you've got to make a decision somewhere else. So what would be on the table as far as areas that have been protected that might be subject to a different approach?
Well, I mean, look, again, we would want to be able to look across all of the different agencies across the cabinet and all of the programs and things that they provide and see inside, because again, some of those things inside the Constitution are protected. And the ability for us to go again across the board in those items is just not there right now. And here's a very important part too, Jim. We're not taking anything out of the Constitution or proposing to and having it go away. The idea would be to take those provisions inside the Constitution that don't belong in the Constitution and belong in statute and place them in a set of statutes that has a two-thirds a threshold in order to amend. And what's interesting is when I go into some of the provisions inside the Constitution and I look at some of those special interest things, you see that in there, in the fine print, the legislature can adjust those things by two-thirds. So I'm thinking, why do we even need it in the Constitution? You know, it's, I give you a plain example. I'm getting ready to go see the sheriffs here at 10 o'clock. Supplemental pay. Listen, there's no one that appreciates and understands and supports law enforcement and our firefighters, our first responders more than me. But the ability to adjust supplemental pay inside the Constitution can be predicated on a two-thirds vote of the legislature. Why do we even need that provision in there if we want to guarantee supplemental pay and say that that's an important part? That's fine. We can do it with about 5 words in the Constitution, and we don't need all the rest.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's just a great example. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like a forest. It's a facade that some of the provisions that in the Constitution can't be meddled with. And so why don't we get those things out, put them in a statute where we can have open and honest debates about them and adjust those things based upon the condition, the financial affairs of the state. That's all we say.
Is the homestead exemption sacred?
Well, I mean, listen, that's another great question. It certainly may be. You know, that's debatable, and those are things that we can discuss in the legislature. The important part about this, what we should be real focused on, Jim, is the enabling legislation. That's the legislation that calls for the convention. That legislation has the ability to act as a call, like, you know, when the governor makes a special session.
We do have to take an 89.3-second break, Governor, but we will be back in very short order with Governor Landry. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow and Renee Martin are producing, and Governor Jeff Landry is with us for a few more moments. As you can imagine, he's busy. This is the third session in his 108 days so far, and now he is advocating a constitutional convention. And as we hit the break, Governor Landry was talking about the call. And I guess that also goes along with the configuration. We will have, if things go according to plan, the House and Senate, the 144 members of the legislature, and 27 delegates appointed by the governor. Do I have it right, Governor?
That's right. That's how they got it set up right now. And look, real quickly, Jim, I'll tell you, the enabling legislation is the guide. Just like when I do a call of legislature into a special session, I can limit that call to a particular topic. Even inside that topic, I can narrow it down even further. The enabling legislation of the convention can do exactly that. And that's why I think that a lot of people who've got a lot of anxiety, certainly the average person, should worry about it. We did it last Wednesday. The House Governmental Affairs Committee took the enabling legislation and basically walled off the first article in the Constitution, which is our fundamental rights. So that's what contains our version of the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth Amendment, right to vote. All of those things are off the table now. And now we move over to, I think tomorrow they're going to deal with Article 2, 3, 4, and 5. And so if we just work through this particular process, I don't think it's going to be all that difficult to do.
Okay. A listener asked about the minimum foundation program and the exemption for food, utilities, and drugs on sales taxes. Are those something that also would be on the table for discussion and review?
Well, look, I think that we should discuss them. I'm not telling you that they should remain or shouldn't remain, but it's also important to know that if they did not remain, they would then be moved over to a set of statutes under which it would take a 2/3 vote to modify those. I had someone raise their hand. I had the whole House, the Republican delegation, and I asked them, I said, how many of y'all want to get rid of supplemental pay for sure? None of them did. I said, how hard is it to be able to modify some of these things that we're talking about anyhow? They all said, it is. But at least we have an opportunity that if we have a good idea and we can generate public support and we can get 2/3 and it's in the best interest of the state of Louisiana, we should have the ability to do so. This places more power in the legislators' hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, Governor Jindal, I think, made 13 cuts to higher ed because he had a budget that was in peril. And you never know what's going to happen. And often things beyond the borders of Louisiana control the budget. But I'm getting the impression, Governor, you're telling us that you don't want to be in that position where you only have one place or two places that you have to make cuts to balance the budget, which we have to do constitutionally.
Absolutely. Look, we know we've got a problem with our educational system in Louisiana from kindergarten or pre-kindergarten all the way up through higher ed. And we can find ways to be a whole lot more efficient if we've got some time. We know that we've got a pretty unhealthy population here, and we've also got a pretty poor population here. I don't want to have to go and make draconian-type cuts in these programs without an opportunity to streamline those programs and focus on the outcomes, how we lift people, number one, out of poverty, and number two, how we don't get them more healthier than they are today. I mean, all that would do would create a bigger obstacle for us to govern over the next 3 years. That's why we're trying to do this.
Okay. Another listener, do you like being compared to Huey Long?
Do I like being compared to Huey Long? Yeah, that's a great question. Look, I've actually read two books since being governor. In fact, my wife read one with me because I was reading the first one to her on Huey. And you know, the one thing that I found that was so interesting is that both of those books started off by saying that, you know, at the time that Huey came in to the political stage or onto the political stage, Louisiana had the worst infrastructure in the nation, had the worst educational system in the nation, had the poorest economy. And I'm thinking to myself, man, Jim, if I stack those statistics up to where we are today, we hadn't done much in the last 100 years or so. And so if you want to compare where we are today and how we're governing compared to Huey Long, maybe there's some analogy to it. It doesn't bother me in the least bit. But I have read a lot about Louisiana history since becoming governor to try to find out where the pitfalls are to make sure we don't make the same mistakes again, and then to try to offer those to the legislature and the people so we can move forward. So I don't know, you know.
Well, some of us liked you.
Yeah, right. I'm not saying it's a bad or a good thing. I mean, I had the interview I had with Tyler Bridges. He said the same thing. And I said, well, listen, I think that there's absolutely some things that you can check off that Huey Long absolutely did very well. I mean, the fact when he gave free textbooks to kids at a time when our educational system was completely in the toilet, I think that was a positive thing. I think that I'm sure that when I'm done, Jim, they'll mark off some things, hopefully, that I did good. And of course, there'll be some people out there and some critics and things that they didn't like. But look, I do. And the one thing I will tell you is I do believe that if you wanted to compare anything between me and, say, Huey Long, I would tell you this. I share the fact that Huey Long always cared for the little fella out there, the man and woman has to get up every day and go to work and try to raise a family. I mean, that's something I've been focused on ever since I was in Congress and when I was Attorney General, to make sure that we got a fair shake at jobs that are out there and to make sure that government gets out of the way of those things. If you want to compare me to Huey Long or that, you can go right ahead. I'll take that.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go, but I do want to note the controversy over the national anthem. Come September, when the LSU Tigers and the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs and the Southern Jaguars and the Grambling Tigers go on the field, will they be present for the national anthem before the kickoff?
That's going to be a decision that the schools are going to make. The thing that I don't want is for the Bulldogs to not be on the field and their opponents be on the field. Now, all of a sudden, we'll have a political storm. What I'm looking for is some consistencies in this sports and let the athletic directors make that particular decision. If the coaches believe that they can do it and they should, well, then let's do that. For me, I'd like to see everybody out there. I think it's a way of unifying people rather than dividing people, especially at a time when the country seems to have gone through way more divisiveness than it needs. So that's my opinion, but I really want to leave it up to the schools. But what I don't want is one team on the field and another not on the field. That creates a problem.
Well, and that's what we had with the LSU women against Iowa. And a listener has already chided me for not mentioning the UL Ragin' Cajuns, the alma mater of Governor Jeff Landry. So I know you're very proud.
And look, I'm going to throw the pitch. I'm going to throw a pitch, I think, this Sunday at one of the UL games. And
they're the top-ranked team in the state. So are you going to do it from the mound?
Well, yeah, I've done it from the mound at LSU. I did it from the mound at Louisiana Tech.
Well, I know a lot of these guys of a certain age, and you're not there yet. They cheat a bit. But you can
well,
still.
Now, come on, Jim. Now, listen, don't jinx me now. I've been pretty, I'm considering, I got two good shots at it. Now I'm going for my third.
Okay. Well, Governor Landry, always a pleasure. Let's talk again soon, and we'll let
Thank
you go.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Okay.
Care. Bye. And Tyler Bridges is on deck. And Tyler, we might be able to get a brief synopsis. You obviously inspired some of the conversation with your interview with the governor. I think he likes the comparison to Huey Long.
Yeah, Jim, he certainly can find some very positive things in the comparison. You know, obviously he wants to compare himself to Huey and helping the little guy and providing textbooks and jobs and things like that.
Okay, we're going to talk more with Tyler Bridges about what's happening at the Capitol and the prospects for a constitutional convention. The governor is definitely wanting to make some changes, and he, in 108 days, has done more, I think, in an effort to change the government than any governor in modern time. We're back after this with more Talk Louisiana with Tyler Bridges. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Tyler Bridges, the Pulitzer Prize winner who writes for The Advocate and The Picayune, covering the Capitol and Louisiana politics, is with us. And Tyler has been through many gubernatorial administrations, and the first days are often the most eventful because there is the so-called honeymoon. But governors can do things to spoil that honeymoon, and I must say, Governor Landry, he's definitely making decisions, as he said, at least 25% of the people probably don't like, but he doesn't seem to mind the potential resistance to some of the moves he's making, Tyler. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Jeff Landry has taken his residence in the governor's mansion and on the fourth floor of the Capitol. Seems to be very comfortable in the job, has an agenda, and as he told me and repeated on your show, he doesn't move slow, and he's trying to get a lot done, particularly while he is in this honeymoon period.
And he mentioned 4 years. There are all kinds of stories that he might go to Washington if Trump's elected, or he might run for the U.S. Senate. Being governor of Louisiana is a pretty good gig, Tyler. If you got it, I don't know why you would leave it.
Well, Jeff Landry took a very meandering path to become governor, more so than his recent predecessors. You know, he took a number of years to go through UL. Didn't go to law school at Loyola until he was in his 30s, but he eventually developed an interest in becoming governor and slowly worked his way up there. You know, 8 years as attorney general, and then he ran a very, very strong campaign, as you know, last year. And now that he's in the office, he is moving to make a lot of changes. We already saw them in that second special session where he put through a package of 20 bills that are, again, get tough on crime, although it's he's doing that in a state that has the highest incarceration rate already in the country, and crime is already coming down. So we'll see how that works out. And then he's got a number of measures he's trying to get through the legislature now that they're in regular session.
Well, in the old days, the Democratic Party ruled like the Republican Party is now, and then factions broke out in the Democratic Party. We've noted in 1987 when Edwin Edwards was running for re-election, he was challenged by Democrats other than Bob Livingston. All the major contenders at that time, including Buddy Romer, were Democrats. Billy Tozan, Jim Brown, Speedy Long, and Livingston was a lone Republican. And now we're going to have this, I'm sure, unless the Democratic Party is resurgent, we're going to have this within the Republican ranks. So Cameron Henry appears to be the most likely spokesman for, quote, the other side of the Republican Party. How are things going with him and the governor?
Yeah, I think they had as both of them have told me, they had a very spirited conversations during that special session and also during the first, particularly the first special session where the Senate held up some of the measures like the governor's attempt to close primaries for all elections, and he only got partially that. But I think they're doing well now. It looks like the Senate is going to hold up one of the governor's major goals, which are the education savings accounts. The Senate, at the behest of Cameron Henry, but also other senators, you know, President Henry's not doing this alone, really want to try to get a handle on how much this might cost the state of Louisiana before they fully implement the education savings accounts.
877-217-5757 for Tyler Bridges. Bill in Opelousas. Bill, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Y'all did a good job of interviewing Mr. Landry, but I think his percentage was wrong. I think it's 75% of people don't approve of his record, and almost 3 million people didn't vote for him in the state of Louisiana. We only 4 million. So I appreciate you coming back.
All right. Well, obviously, children can't vote, and people under 18, I think, are about a million people in Louisiana. So, okay, we got 4.6. But we have about 3 million registered voters, and only of that 3 million, only 35.6% voted. You're right. Most people didn't vote, but it wasn't Jeff Landry's fault they didn't vote. People make decisions not to vote, and so I can't imagine why he wouldn't think that he has popular support because he won going away. But Tyler, we've noted Louisiana's become apathetic, or whatever you want to call it, when it comes to statewide elections, because Landry got fewer votes than Cleo Fields. He got in Cleo lost by a big margin to Mike Foster, and he got fewer votes than David Duke, who lost by a big margin to Edwin Edwards. I don't know that the people in Louisiana are that engaged about our politics anymore. That is a departure from years gone by, but we've talked about it. Is there any reason why we are not engaged in statewide elections the way we are in national ones?
Yeah, Jim, I can't answer that question. I don't think anybody really knows. But I think the interesting question to pose is, because Jeff Landry did not get a big, big number of people in Louisiana to vote for him, what happens if things start to go a bit south for him? That's the question I've been asking myself. Does that mean that things could head south really quickly because he had not built enough popular will behind his policies? And remember, as you know, Jim, when he ran last year, he really only talked about anti-crime measures. He barely talked about the Constitutional Convention. He barely talked about a number of things like closed primaries, changing the congressional districts, Supreme Court redistricting, things like that, that he has education savings accounts that he's now trying to push through the legislature, or has pushed through the legislature.
Yeah, he didn't play his hand, and he didn't have to. He did one debate, but often candidates are way out in front, don't do debates. Bobby Jindal didn't do any debates when he ran for re-election in 2011. Because he was way out in front, and I'm sure political consultants were telling Landry probably not to even do the one, but he did it, and now you're right. He moving forward, being governor, especially if you're governor when the money starts going dry, and things may be more difficult for him than Governor Edwards, who benefited to some extent from COVID money, but he could be challenged from within the party. And then there is Governor Edwards, who left office, I think, is one of the most popular governors in Louisiana history. And you heard him a few weeks ago, Tyler. He said, "I'm not out to pasture." We could be headed, I know it's a bit premature to look ahead 3 years, but we could be headed for a matchup of the current governor and the former governor.
Yeah, of course, we don't know the answer to that. But Jim, I thought it was interesting a few minutes ago, you gave Governor Landry the opportunity to be a bit more specific on when he talks about wanting to spread the cuts next year. You gave him the opportunity to be specific, and he chose not to do so. But he also left open the opportunity that the legislature or the Constitutional Convention could make changes with the homestead exemption, also with the MFP formula for K-12 spending.
Well, I remember when the homestead exemption, which is at $75,000, that covered most of the homes in Louisiana. but it doesn't anymore. So now the homestead exemption, some people believe, should be raised, not lowered, Tyler.
Well, that's not going to be on the table, but it'll be very interesting to see what sorts of items the would be taken out of the Constitution. You know, again, the governor told you he wants to overhaul the tax code. Well, what does that mean?
James in Lafayette. James, you're on Talk Louisiana with Tyler Bridges.
Good morning, guys. I heard y'all mention that why people not voting at you. I didn't know why. It's because I think democracy is not reaching.
I think that's the same guy. Robin says it's the same guy. So please don't do that. If you call in, please use your real name and your real location. Don't try to fool me because I can detect voices pretty well. 877-217-5757 is your number. But there are those who are calling Governor Landry Huey P. Landry, but I've noted that Huey Long had to survive an impeachment to stay as governor. Jeff Landry did mention that he has a supermajority from his own party, so obviously he has tools in his box that other governors have not, Tyler.
Yeah, he certainly does. He has an advantage, certainly, that John Bel Edwards did not have over the last 8 years, or even Bobby Jindal the 8 years before that. And the legislature has just passed the halfway point. And I'm going to be writing a story for this coming weekend, kind of looking where they're at. And again, you mentioned Senate President Cameron Henry. A lot of the bills that the House has passed very easily are now coming over to the Senate. So what's going to happen to those pieces of legislation that would make big changes in the lives of Louisiana citizens?
My friend Mark Upton in the Garden District says, why does a governor prioritize spending $3 million sending troops to the border versus feeding children in Louisiana? I get the impression that Mark in the Garden District is not a supporter of Governor Landry. And the Advocate did a story about those troops on the border. It looks like they're more sightseers than actual combatants on the border, Tyler.
Yeah, if anybody missed that article, my colleague James Finn did a terrific piece where he went to Eagle Pass, Texas. And Mark, your listener, I think, raises a very interesting question. That same $3 million could have brought down $71 million in a summer feeding program for poor kids. Instead, that $3 million could be argued went for the National Guard troops on the border with Texas.
And Governor Landry is, facing some pushback from Cameron Henry on that. Henry says we're going to find a way, the state is, to take part in that program.
Yeah, apparently there is still time for Louisiana to apply for that money. So we'll see if the legislature appropriates that money against the wishes of the governor.
877-217-5757. We've got lots of emails at talk@talklouisiana.org, but if you call, you'll be first in line if you've got a reasonable question and you're not an imposter. Tyler Bridges is back after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number in the final quarter hour is 877-217-5757, and Tyler Bridges, the intrepid reporter, is with us. We've got some people waiting to talk to Tyler on the air, and Robin Dow has chosen an email from Ann in Mid-City, who writes, the governor is making a case and trying to get folks to stay in the state by saying that the homestead exemption is up for debate. What are some of his other strategies to get people to stay in the state? How are folks supposed to afford life here with any type of quality? Well, the governor made the point, Tyler, that a lot of these southern states, and by the way, I saw the other day in an Atlantic Constitution story that the three fastest growing cities in the country are Dallas, Houston, and Atlanta. And those are, of course, in our region, and Georgia and Texas didn't take the Medicaid money, neither did Florida. Oh, they have a lot of these social issues that their legislatures have gone full bore into, and Landry makes the point that they're doing pretty well. Is that analogous to Louisiana, or are we an island unto ourselves?
Well, certainly that was the argument that Republicans made, not just Jeff Landry, but the other Republican candidates in last year's governor's race, and their argument is lower taxes, fewer regulations on business, changing the education system to give parents greater choice. And the one thing that hasn't been mentioned yet is to deal with the whole property insurance question. And Commissioner of Insurance Tim Temple has taken the lead on that, with a number of measures that basically would deregulate the market and give the insurance companies greater incentive to come into the state with the argument that the more companies here will lower rates or at least hold down the rate increases.
Ellen in Sherwood. Ellen, good morning. You're on with Tyler. Hi, Ellen.
Good morning. We didn't mention that there was an opponent of Jeff Landry, Sean Wilson, who is an excellent person, but he just didn't run a strong race, and he didn't have enough support. But as you said, Landry hardly got any percentage of the votes. I mean, just the lowest percentage of votes, and he's acting like
he got a higher percentage of votes. He got a lower percentage of registered voters, but he got over 50%, I think over 51% of the votes. So, but Sean Wilson, and he keeps being badgered for running a poor race. Well, he got 26% of the votes. That was not a surprise, and considering the amount of money he spent, 26% was respectable. But people who spent far more money than Sean Wilson, like Hunter Lundy and Stephen Wagusback and John Schroeder and even Sharon Hewitt, they collectively got fewer votes than Sean Wilson. In fact, if you take out Landry's votes, Tyler, Sean Wilson would have won without a runoff if the other candidates were just added up. He got more than half of the remaining votes, so It's a case in which I think Sean Wilson has gotten a bad rap.
Well, that's what happens when you lose a race. People say you ran a bad campaign or you weren't a good candidate. But Dr. Wilson obviously presented a strong background as a guy who'd been the transportation secretary for the governor, John Bel Edwards, had worked for the previous Republican governor, Bobby Jindal, and presented a case of why he should be the next governor, but he did fall, pretty far short. And as we discussed, Jeff Landry won the primary outright.
Tim and Thibodeau. Tim, you're on with Tyler. Hello, sir.
Thanks, Jim and Tyler. Tyler, I just wanted to discuss or to recommend that y'all both consider for our guest the lieutenant governor and litter. Well, people say you can't do about anything about it in this state. I disagree. I have been to Michigan in the poorest county, and they will throw your rear end in jail and fine you $250 if you think about throwing anything down. I still hear reports of people throwing lunch boxes out from here to Baton Rouge and here to New Orleans.
All right, and we will talk with the lieutenant governor on Friday if things go according to plan. Thank you, Tim. Patrick in Ennisswald Estates. Hello, Patrick. You're on.
Hey, why didn't the trial lawyers support Sean Wilson like they did Edwards?
Well, Tyler may have some observations on that, but I think the trial lawyers wanted to go with a winner, and they thought Jeff Landry was going to win, and he supported their endeavor, for example, in suing the oil companies for ripping up the coast. He's on board with that. So, Tyler, some say that's an unholy alliance if there ever was one, but Jeff Landry is a lawyer, and he did have trial lawyer support, which shows he's also a pretty good politician.
Yeah, I wrote a story last year for The Advocate on that, and traditionally, the trial lawyers are indeed an important part of the Democratic constituency, particularly in raising money, but there's also a mercenary aspect to them. And with Jeff Landry projected to win the race, they made a cold, calculated decision. A number of them did that they were going to support Jeff Landry and try to stop any major changes in the tort law. That would, they don't want to make it harder for people to sue the people they would represent who are injured. And so that was a decision that many of them made. And so we'll see how that plays out.
One of my mentors, my dear friend Gus Weil, used to say, everybody looks good in an inaugural parade. And of course, when a governor wins, really it doesn't matter which party they're in, people want to latch on to the governor. And I've seen this with many of John Bel Edwards' closest supporters on the LSU board who are now hugging on to Jeff Landry, desperately trying to keep their spots on the LSU board, Tyler. Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's certainly it's a plum position. And I'll note that I think that tomorrow the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee is going to hear a bill by Senator Valerie Hodges that would allow the governor to make a lot more appointments quicker. For example, when he takes office, to immediately appoint all the members of the LSU board and gain control of it, because right now those appointments come in staggered terms.
And
a bill to keep an eye on for tomorrow.
I have some questions for people who are doing this, because if it's a governor you like, well, yeah, that's a great idea. But what if it's somebody you don't like? What if John Bel Edwards came back and suddenly the new law applied to him and he could just sweep away everybody Jeff Landry put in place? I suspect Valerie Hodges wouldn't like that very much. James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Jim, and hello, Tyler. Tyler, could you give us an update on these so-called education savings accounts that seem to be a key plank, if you will, in the governor's agenda? There was one estimate of about $520 million annual cost to this. I see where it passed, I believe, the Senate Education Committee, but where is it now in its progress through the legislature? And thank you.
Tyler?
Yeah, sure, James. There's two different bills. There's a House bill by Julie Emerson, and there's a Senate bill by Rick Edmonds, which was the one you just referenced. And the Senate bill by Rick Edmonds is now being delayed. I think the next hearing is before the Senate Finance Committee because of the cost. But the Senate President Henry has told me that they are slowing down these bills because they want to get a handle on the cost, and they're not approving the full bill this year. I think what they're just going to do is approve the spending of $1.6 million just to get it started, and then they have a year to take a look at exactly how much it might cost, what's going on in other states, because we've seen that in other states, it's become an enormous budget cost. So I think the Senate's wanting to get a better handle on that for now.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hello, Phil. You're on.
Yeah, hello, Jim. I have a question about Senate Bill number 382 or 482, the one about public records. And also, are businesses going to be able to keep guns out of them? I know.
All right. What on the guns? I think businesses still have the option of refusing to allow somebody in with a gun. But if you've got a concealed gun, how am I going to know if you got a gun when you come to my door? But anyway, on the other one, what about the records? That's one that, of course, the media are not happy about, and I can't say I blame them. I think sunshine is good, but I've never been on the other side either. But some of these records, and Peter Kovacs noted this the other day on our show, Tyler, that sometimes journalists have their emails, if they're conversing in cyberspace with people in government, they have their records seized too. And when it comes down to it, when it's a public entity, Bob Manns made the case that these aren't the records of the agency or the governor or the president. These are the people's records. What do you think?
Well, I'm a big believer in sunshine. Without sunshine, what are the public officials trying to hide? And I know Bob has made the argument that if this bill passes, would lead to more public corruption. Louisiana has a long history of that. So I think for everybody involved, transparency is important. But it's not just Republicans who are targeted by public records requests. There have been all sorts of stories that have been written about LaToya Cantrell thanks to public records requests, or the Ronald Green's information that was embarrassing to Governor John Bel Edwards. So having this information out there, this disinfectant, greater sunshine affects both parties, I think, equally. And I also note that, the governor has said that, he doesn't want his inside deliberations coming out. Well, he's protected under the deliberative process law. He and his senior people are already. So it's really, so why in a state with all this tradition of corruption?
Got to roll. But Tyler, thanks for your time. We'll be calling you very soon. And till tomorrow, Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.